This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the June 2nd edition of the DRF Players Podcast, show 243, making our way surely, slowly but surely to episode 250. Seems like we just did show 200. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn bunker today with Muggs the Handicapping Labrador, joined on the phone, as always, by the people's champion, Jonathan Kinchin. JK, what's happening today?
Oh, man, nothing much. Just getting ready for a little fun weekend, kind of the calm before the storm, before our final Triple Crown race. And then next thing you know, we'll be drunk in your backyard for Saratoga.
Don't take these next couple of months away from me before we get to that. But it is true. That is coming soon. Saratoga meet won't be too far away. We do have a good weekend of stakes action. We'll be getting to that in a little bit. Lots of contest action coming up also, even if Jonathan's not participating. We do have the Monmouth Pick Your Prize this weekend. I'll be covering that in the pages of DRF and over at DRF.com. And then, of course, next weekend, it's the Belmont Challenge. And this weekend on DRF Tournaments, we have the final opportunities to qualify. Go on to DRF Tournaments right now, and you'll see the opportunities. Basically, every day you have a chance to advance to Sunday, or you can just put up the 410 to play on Sunday. And from Sunday, one in 30 entries will advance to the Belmont Stakes Challenge. You will win your $10,000 buy-in. You will win 500 in travel. Players coming in from across the country. That's going to be a ton of fun and some seriously good stuff. Also, while I'm plugging things, I'm going to go ahead and plug our bus trip coming up. Now, JK, you sound unlikely. You're impossible for Monmouth, unlikely for Belmont. But are you going to make it in for this trip on June 16th?
I want to. I do. I think that we should work. There's a show of hashtags. We should make a hashtag trying to convince me that it's going to be a party I can't miss. So if any listeners can think of a clever hashtag that can help persuade me. I'll be honest, Pete. It's high on my list, but I have an opportunity to check out Stephen Foster Night, which I've been to before, which is a lot of fun. It's night racing. The lights are on. I believe they're going to have a tournament.
Hey, you fly that night as well. You fly for free. Why not do both?
Friday, right?
Yeah. And for those who don't know what we're talking about, June 16th, first ever DRF Players Podcast get together. We are co-sponsoring this along with Revolution Brewery, Barcade, the great bar in Williamsburg, and also our friends over at Angels Envy, as well as, of course, Naira. And the way it works is this. There's two ways you can show up. You can either join me approximately 1 o'clock on the 16th at Barcade, and we're going to have a party bus that takes us out to the track that day. I imagine we'll do a little impromptu Q&A / seminar on the way. There will be beer. And then we're going to show up at the track and get to grilling. Naira have provided us one of those fantastic group grilling areas, which I'm really excited about. I've never actually been a part of one of them, and it's something I've heard great things about from those who have an excellent, fun way to do your next get-together out there at Belmont Park. So that's going to be super fun. So you can join us directly at the track and participate in the fun, or you can take the bus ride with us. If you look at my Twitter, which is at LoomsBoldly, you'll see a pinned tweet with an Eventbrite link. You can buy your tickets today. There are still some seats left, and we're going to have a great time. And clearly, I'm not enough of a draw, listeners. So if you want to tweet at JK and tell him he's got to come join us that day, that would be much appreciated. Yeah, and with the fact that you fly for free, Jonathan, I think that's no excuse. You come here and you just fly out, you know, New York to Louisville's not hard. So just, you know, get yourself out Saturday morning and do the doubleheader. And speaking of flying, you know, and your vast experience, I have had a couple of questions come in. And this is one of these things, like, I think I have my little notes that I have for each show. I'll tweet them at some point. They're so disorganized, and it would probably make somebody laugh at how you could possibly get an hour or 2 hours of programming a week out of the chicken scratch I have on this spiral notebook next to me. But I've had a note forever that I haven't gotten to, a little bit dated at this point, but about the now infamous man being dragged off the plane incident from, I guess, now... almost a couple of months back. So I wanted to ask you about that incident. If, you know, you as a high priority standby customer, if you're the type of person who people get dragged off planes so you can sit in your customary seat. And then I understand you had a new airline situation you wanted to discuss as well.
Yeah, no. So I'm actually a low priority standby passenger. The actual breakdown is that my mother, retired from American after, I don't know, 28 years or whatever. And part of her retirement package was, you know, lifetime flight benefits. And she's a single woman, so she does not have a companion. So I am her registered companion, which is unlimited flights. I can only get on a plane where there's an empty seat. So in that situation, an oversold flight where that guy got drug off a plane, I would have already been at the bar getting a beer, waiting for my hour and a half, you know, layover until my next opportunity to get on. Oversold flights are a nightmare for me. But no, I wouldn't have been the reason he was dragged off. They would have probably drugged me off. So. Never happened to me before. I've never seen it happen. My favorite moment at the airport I caught on video was an eccentric couple, to say the least, where the man with a mullet and a mini dog decided to leave his wife. And I think it was in Florida or New Orleans. He was going back. She was crying. And he was like, I got to get home. And she's like, I can't believe you're leaving me here. What am I going to do? In fact, if we're not Instagram friends, I have the videos on my Instagram. It's hilarious. She's like, Charles, but where am I going to go? It was amazing. I felt bad for her, but it was hilarious. Charles could not care less.
Oh, my God.
I've seen some pretty interesting things, but nothing like the United video with the guy being drug off.
Now, that story you just told is going to bring, if Susan listens to the show, and she probably won't, but if she does, she would doubtless tell the infamous story in our/her family, where at some point, her brother is a pilot, and at some point had arranged for us to potentially, it was sort of a standby situation, but we had the opportunity to fly first class, and it ended up that there was one first class seat and one seat in coach. And, you know, I obviously at first offered to her. She made the point, well, look, I'm going to be working the whole flight. You wanted to sleep. And this was like a flight to London. So it was like a reclining thing. So it was decided that I thought I had the go-ahead to go ahead and take the first-class seat. And in truth, it was a wonderful experience. Basically, you have your actually halfway decent meal, you know, drink a couple of Fullers, and I fell asleep. It was like the fastest flight I've ever had in my life. But little did I realize this was one of those situations where when Susan said, yes, you can have the seat, that really meant, what are you kidding? Of course I'm going to take the seat. I didn't pick up on that signal. I listened to the actual words that were said, and I've been getting guff for it ever since. So that's the closest I can come to the Charles video.
Well, it's called the Never Leave a Soldier Behind. I learned that in standby travel as a young age. There's usually a lot of opportunities where they'll say, if you're traveling with someone, they'll say, do you want to split? I usually have a higher priority than someone I'm with, but I refuse. I never leave a soldier behind. Same with first class. You never leave a soldier behind. So
that was a faux pas. You agree it was a faux pas on my part?
Shame on you.
You had one other airline bit of business, I believe, you wanted to bring up before we actually get to talking about horse racing. We will at some point talk about horse racing on the show. But what was
well,
the,
I,
the
I just well, it's it, this is a little horse racing like it's my version of an airplane inquiry.
I like it.
It's called. We're gonna make a hashtag. I'm in a hashtag mood for some reason. Stop aisle jackers. It is my biggest pet peeve in airline travel. When I am in row 15 in some jack wagon in row 17, feels as if just because I'm not that overzealous person who's standing up for 12 minutes while it's my turn to get off, just because I'm sitting there patiently doesn't mean that I don't want to get off when it is my turn. So don't jump in front of me in the aisle. You sit your ass back there in 17 and wait until it's my turn. You know, it drives me insane. It drives me nuts. I want to just grab them by their backpacks and yank them back.
Have you ever said anything in this situation? A little bit of air rage once you're already on the ground? Have you gone there?
Well, typically, one of my travel that no one's going to be surprised about this. I typically will have an adult beverage while I'm waiting. So sometimes, you know, I'm a little bit braver than others. I'm not that confrontational. I'll under my breath say things like, geez, are you in a hurry? Or golly, geez, I hope they don't leave you, or, you know, whatever. I mean, if you're on a connecting flight, I get it. But the truth of the matter is you're in 17, I'm in 15. If you get in front of me, you're not making your flight because you got in front of me. Oh, it drives me insane. Drives me insane.
I was guilty of this once, and I was definitely the wrong party in this story, too. I don't know what it was. For some, I do not usually have flying anxiety, but on this one flight, I did. And, like, even though we landed, it was a bumpy flight, whatever. Even though we landed, I was feeling a little crazed. And I just, like, I knew I was being a jerk, sort of like pushing in front of a person, and I did it anyway. And he said, as you would, stood up for himself and you know, basically told me to stop aisle jacking. And I just gave him the most sincere sorry look I could and basically made it clear that I didn't have a choice that time. But that was a one-time thing. Normally, I wait my turn, and I encourage everyone listening to do the same. Anything else on airplanes or aisle jacking before we move on to a cool little racing related tangent?
No, we could move on, but just let me know if you see an aisle jacker, take a picture of them. You can take a sneak picture, tweet it, stop aisle jacking or stop aisle jackers, and let's see if we can't try to solve this epidemic in the world. We don't have that many problems in the world right now, so let's focus on this one, and let's try to get this solved. I think this is probably the most pressing thing in the world today.
I just have to leave that alone. But one thing that did cheer me up in this world of ours, new TV commercial among, now maybe this is just because I'm a racing fan, but I thought it was sincerely just a fantastic 60 seconds of TV that really used the power of the medium in this case, to sell Audis, but using a rather unique television star for a commercial, in this case, Secretariat. Tell folks about this ad, John.
Yeah, it was cool. I had a layover and I was watching the game, and then the commercial came on, and I had heard something about an Audi commercial, but I didn't. I had heard it in passing in the last week or so, but I just wasn't aware of what it was exactly. So I'm actually kind of happy when I saw it. I was just like, you know, when you see a horse running on TV in HD, you kind of like look up. You're like, I'm not watching TVG or I'm not watching HRTV. This is like actually, you know, ABC. And so it's a really cool commercial where essentially they're pointing out that Secretariat was special because his heart was twice the size of a normal thoroughbred's heart. And then they kind of tie it back into the size of the engine of the Audi. And that's what makes it so special. And really cool visuals, and I really enjoyed it. I was happy to see it, and thankful that Audi decided to pick our sport to highlight their new vehicle.
Yeah, some really cool subtle filmmaking in the little 60-second spot. You can find it on YouTube. And Jonathan, you had a cool idea for a contest potentially. Can't give away anything quite as big as what we gave away last week, but I certainly think we can give away a feeder. We'll give away a feeder entry to an upcoming tournament if folks answer this question correctly via Twitter, and then if assuming there will be more than one answer correct, we will we'll go ahead and we'll just put names in a hat and pull one out. But why don't you let folks know the question and how they should submit it to us?
Yeah, what track was it filmed at? A friend of mine, Robert, actually texted me, and I had to watch it like 10 times, and then I had to even cheat. I had to ask. I was struggling to figure out where it was. So tag us, tag Audi, and tag the racetrack that you think it is, and I think Pete's got a little something he can throw out. I don't know what it is exactly, but yeah, and tweet us, and let's try to get the answer of what racetrack it was filmed at.
I like it. Yeah, so hit us up on Twitter. He's at UT Big Hair. I'm at Looms Boldly. Audi is at Audi. And then you can either tag the racetrack you think it is, or simply just write the name of the racetrack in. And I don't know the answer actually right now, but I'm sure that can be verified easily enough. And we'll send somebody to a feeder for the World Championship of Handicapping. We've got contest for the WCH going on. Everything right now pointing to the big Belmont Day contest, where 1 in 10 will win their full $5,000 buy-in to the $1 million no takeout WCH finals. To qualify for that event, every day DRFT is running tournaments. You can put up $95, and 1 in 7 will win their $580 buy-ins for the Grade 1 Belmont Day. Those contests have proven to be very popular. Get involved if you haven't already. A lot of players are putting that contest high on their priority list for obvious reasons. It's one of the best deals going in the contest world, and even though it's a few months out, it doesn't hurt to get your ticket punched early for the World Championship Handicapping. Let's move on and take a few listener questions before we get into this weekend's races, Jonathan. We'll start off. Matt wants to know, what's the best tool for identifying, of the potential Belmont runners, which ones are maintaining strong fractions or even quickening at the end of 9 and 10 furlong races? And then he adds a little note, actually, is quickening a good predictor, or would that fall into the category or trap of thinking closers are the horses who do well in the Belmont? Perhaps maintaining fractions would be more important. So address that question any way you'd like.
Well, it's a great question. I don't know the quick answer. Here's what I'll say is I think the idea of a quicken is probably a little bit more valuable in a turf race than it is in a mile and a half dirt race. I think what you want to find in a dirt race, and this is honestly me, if Pete were to ask me this question, like how can we figure this out, this would be me giving him some ideas and then him telling me if he likes it or not, and then we would need to experiment with it. But I would want to take a 10 furlong race like the Derby and cut it in half and see if they ran the first 5 furlongs as fast as they ran the second 5 furlongs, and then do the same. It's going to be a little bit harder in a 9 furlong race. Maybe you could, like, I don't know if you can even do 4.5, but that's all. I want to know if they're running faster at the end of the race than they were at the beginning. I want to know if they're, you've actually probably heard Paul Matisse talk about it before. His pace figures that he makes can kind of illustrate it, but it's looking for that down line or an up line where the figure they're getting stronger as the race goes on. I'm really not sure what the best way to go about it. I guess the other option would be to look at the late pace figures that are available on Timeform US to identify a horse that is finishing late. However, I wouldn't want to get caught in the closer category because I do not believe that closers run well at Belmont. It's a great question. And I don't have the quick answer, but I would think that it would be somewhere along those lines.
Two things I'll follow up on with what you were talking about, JK. One, Timeform US, I think, is the tool that you want to help identify this. JK mentioned the Matisse concept of uplining and downlining. You can see an equivalent of that. The way the pace figures are computed is different the way that Craig does them than the way that Paul does them. But some of the principles remain the same. When you're looking at a Timeform USP and you're seeing an array of pace numbers that will follow you through the race from the 2 furlong, the 4 furlong, the 6 furlong, whatever the different calls are, and then under them you'll see the pace figure. So you can look at a certain horse and see, is this horse a horse who's typically getting to a certain point and slowing down, or a horse who's running more even numbers. And I would think that looking for a horse to get the 12 furlongs, that's really what you're looking for. I think our Matt answered his own question, I think, really. It's not a horse who's going to start out slow and is quickening at the end. They're going to be woefully out of position early in most runnings of the Belmont. I mean, it may be different depending if there's a speed duel and a collapse, obviously, but most of the time that's not how it works. And you're certainly not going to want the horse that runs fast for a mile and then tails off. Again, there can be exceptions, a horse just running inefficiently because they went too fast early. But if you see that habitual pattern of a horse weakening late, which you could see in that array of numbers in the Timeform USPP, that would be a horse you'd want to stay away with as well, stay away from as well, in my opinion. You're more going to want that horse who's got early pace numbers to be in the mix, to be within a few lengths of the lead, but who isn't tailing off late. Another just quick and dirty way you could try to do this, also using Timeform US, is looking at the snapshot on the preview page of the screen that Jonathan was referring to when he was talking about looking for those late pace numbers. You don't want the horse that's running a 40 early and 100 late, necessarily. My gut would be you want the horse there who has a little bit of balance between those numbers. Maybe it's a 75 early and an 80 late, or an 80 early and a 75 late. But something where you're fast enough to be in touch early, and you can compare all the runners in the race once the Belmont's drawn, and you can get your Timeform USPPs. You'll be able to see this for every runner in that race. And maybe this is something we'll come back to on the pod, JK, when we have the Timeform PPs, because we're going to do a special show next week previewing Belmont Day on Thursday. It'll be you, it'll be me, it'll be somebody else. But let's try to remember to come back and look at the Timeform snapshot and try to use that to make some educated guesses about horses we believe will be able to maintain their speed and be a factor going longer. Because it is an interesting question, and we can get some other perspectives on it as well. Speaking of other perspectives on the Belmont, just want to point out the marquees will be going up soon on DRF.com, but I've got two very special shows I'll be hosting next week. Wednesday at 8, we've got a reunion of the show we did from the Preakness. If you missed our Preakness webinar, you missed Andy Beyer saying Always Dreaming would be out of the top four. You missed Andy Serling giving out the cold 98.50 exacta. Those two will be back with me on Wednesday night going over the Belmont Stakes. That should be a ton of fun. Always a pleasure to work with those guys who I've known since I was sitting on the stage, side of the stage at Ciro's all those years ago, and Harvey Pack was the host. Then Thursday night, we're going to be doing a really fun one. It'll be my first chance to work with David Aragona, a handicapper I really respect, and Mike Beer, who's been a veteran of many webinars and handicapping sessions with me, will be joining as well. I imagine we'll be doing sort of a hybrid approach to looking at the whole Belmont Stakes card using both Timeform US and DRF and DRF Formulator for that one. That'll be fun. And then Thursday morning next week, 11 a.m., you, me, and should we grab somebody else for that show? What do you think?
Yeah, I got a New York idea. Just depends on timing. But, yeah, we'll try to come up with something for sure.
I was thinking of trying to recruit our buddy Nick Tamaro. Not sure he's coming into New York. Not sure what his travel plans will be. But if they are if they're not prohibitive, that would be cool.
He will be in New York. I think he might have another media appearance.
What?
But I don't know what time his. I don't know if it will conflict. There's a word on the streets he might be doing Talking Horses with Andy Serling on Friday, but I'm not 100% sure.
Well, that would be cool. I if he's going to be on Talking Horses, I'll accept that. And if he's going to be on Steve Bick, I'll accept that. But anything else, I'm going to be upset. but anyway, he's the kind of guest, perhaps we can even move around our time of recording to accommodate him. We have a lot of friends over at Naira, obviously, too. They're all going to be so crazy. Let's see what we can do to get Nick involved. If not, you know, so many other good options in our podcast family. We'll find something cool to get the job done. Couple of other questions before we get to handicapping here. Somebody pitched an idea for attracting young bettors. I wanted to see what you thought of this idea, Jonathan. you have some sort of deal where a certain amount of losing tickets, losing Parimutuel tickets, gets you a free drink or some other piece of hospitality. What do you think of that idea?
Yeah, I got involved in that thread a little bit. I think it's a great idea. You know, I know it at, you know, places, sports books, not all of them in Vegas. Essentially, you go up there, and if you make a $20 bet, they'll give you a drink ticket. And so if you make a larger than $20 bet, then the guy will typically throw you a couple extra, and you and your buddies stack up the tickets and come back that night and watch the game. I don't believe they give drink tickets if you bet $50 on a sports, you know, a sports game. It's got to be a larger wager. I think it could work really well in racing, especially because we've talked about this before in the show, that on-track dollar, when you bet at Santa Anita, on Santa Anita, when you bet at Naira, on Naira, at Gulfstream, on Gulfstream, that they call it the golden dollar. The takeout that they and the profit that they make off that dollar is so much bigger than if you were to bet it from another place or from home. So to if there is a way where if you go up to the window and you make a $20 bet or a $30, $40 bet, whatever they decide the threshold that makes sense for them is, that they give you a drink ticket or a food voucher. Even just a draft beer or something with, you know, that's not very expensive for them. It's an opportunity where I could see a lot of people that, you know, people want to do things. They want to get out of the house and do stuff. And if you present an opportunity where they can have fun, but then they can also have a couple of drinks for free while they're having that fun, I think people would sometimes be a little bit more, open to getting involved in the wagering part of it. So I think there's a lot to it. And, you know, to me, it's really the same thing as when they do dollar beers, right? You know, they do dollar beers and dollar hot dogs. I would imagine maybe the beer part of it is not a loss for them, but I would imagine it's at least a break-even proposition or pretty darn close to that. So maybe you can justify through that mindset that if you can give someone a free beer for making a $20 wager, it could encourage people to participate.
Our friend Dan Kovaleski famously became a racing fan because of dollar beer and hot dogs out at Canterbury. And now he bets real money and has been to the final table twice. And something I'd emphasize here, I feel like you could do this, and I think Craig Burnick, friend of the podcast, has mentioned this idea before. You could do the same thing with admission and with parking. Like, make all of these expenses recuperable in some way. And it gets back to the idea that we talked about. Thanks to everybody. We got a lot of positive comments on our takeout conversation, and I'm really glad to hear that was so well received by our audience. And this relates to that in a way. It's the idea of trying to push people through that funnel. You know, I think there's some people in racing who look at the small bettors, the people like at the what you call the top of that funnel, and they think about, how do we make money off them? How do we monetize them? And that's where you get things like paying for admission at the track and paying for picnic tables and this stuff that I really don't like at all. But if there was some you go ahead.
Well, no, I didn't mean to interrupt your thought. I was going to make it recuperable. Is that, I would have said recuperatable. See, that's why they pay you the big bucks.
No, the medium-sized bucks. I think it's recuperable. But the...
No, you're right.
My idea is to, even with those people, give them... Let's create reasons for them to start betting more. Let's try to move them down the funnel. And let's try to create a culture back there where, you know, it's okay if you don't make every penny off somebody who's going and enjoying it, because that person is just sort of becoming an ambassador for the game as a whole, and you make so much money off, honestly, even if it's just 1 in 100 people who you can get betting all the time and becoming an annuity for the sport, like, let some people sort of just function as contributing in a small way to the handle, yes, but also just creating an environment where we can get the more of the hardcore types. And I think promotion ideas like the one that our listener proposed are very smart and worth passing along. So I'm glad we yapped about that for a minute. We also had a Saratoga-specific question, one of our listeners bringing a crew to the Travers, looking for suggestions on tickets or spots to get for Travers Day. What's your history with Travers? Is this just going to be a me filibuster? What's your history with Travers Day? Have you only been the one time?
Yeah, I've only been once. You know, I think just to me, I enjoy, you know, going to the paddock bar, letting, you know, setting up a tab with Desiree, letting her sort you out all day. It gets pretty busy in there, but if you get there early enough, you can get a table. You can get a stand-up table. I prefer the stand-up table situation because I like to move around, but you got to kind of have someone that's going to hold down that base. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, Traverse Day, that's tough. I mean, I'll be honest. I think that's tricky. You could try to get there early, and if you had the right group of friends, you could try to hold down one of those high tops in the paddock bar, but it's... I mean, it's so crazy, and also you got to remember that day is so long. We did it one Whitney day where we were just on our feet all day, and it worked out pretty well. It was also, like, the best weather in the history of Saratoga that day, which helped. It was super comfortable, even under the tent. I would say, as crazy as it sounds, to think about, if you're just looking for a spot, this is, first of all, I don't know what the situation is. I don't know when the hospitality goes on sale. We have our standing deal with them that we do every year, and thank goodness we do, because it can be chaotic. But the first thing I do is talk to Naira and see what, if anything, they have available. They might not have anything. Back in the day, one of the hacks you could do was they would draw the Saratoga seats. They'd kind of do it in a lottery. So, like, there were people who would buy a seat for every day of the meet, just because if you bought every day of the meet, you got Travers. And then you could either sell weekends, give them away, whatever. But honestly, for what you're going to probably pay secondary market for seats, if you want to sit and watch the race in the grandstand, you're probably just as well off spending whatever it is to get seats for the meet. They also used to have one where you could get you could buy every day that week, and that would put you in priority below the people who bought every day, but still well ahead of the people buying individual seats. So
yeah, you know, the other place I like a lot, and I don't know what it's like for Travers. I'd imagine it's a nightmare, but it's a cool spot, and you'll know the name of it, Pete. But where Loot usually sits,
the porch.
You go right up. Is the, what's it, the porch? Is that what it's called?
I think I don't. I've never actually hung out with Lute at Saratoga, except in our spot. But I'm assuming he seems like a porch sitting man to me.
Well, here's the deal: like when you walk out of the paddock bar, the first escalator you go up, and it's that to the right, that kind of dining area to the right that has like the carousel top. It's not the carousel where the tournament is. It's like if the carousel where the tournament is at the eighth pole. This would be at the wire.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. That is not the porch. Yeah, those commercial dining areas, you're just going to have to call and find out if they're available. Another thing I'll mention that we did one year, and there was kind of a funny story that went along with it, is the famous running of the tables. There are people, they will camp out the night before or show up there at 4 in the morning. If you can nominate some poor slob friend to do this for you, God bless. And when they open those gates at 6 o'clock, and it's a running to get the free picnic tables. Now, they also have this thing, I alluded to it before, actually, where I think you can pay a certain amount to reserve a picnic table on that day. The backyard, if you can get where you're near the horse path or the paddock, I don't think the backyard is a terrible way to go if you're doing it in sort of a casual way. I mean, it's a massive humanity back there. It's not necessarily conducive to betting super seriously, but if you're looking to have a good time, and then, of course, you can bring in your own food and beer, you can have a pretty good day doing the running of the tables or buying a reserve picnic table. I would just caution, try to get it near the horse path of the paddock, because I find it silly to go to Saratoga for the whole day and never see a horse in the flesh. I can't condone that. And then my story about running the picnic tables, I wrote a blog post about this. Maybe I'll dig it up and send it around on Twitter. Years ago, my friend DVP, the legendary DVP, did you come across him? Was he there the year you were there?
I believe so.
Yeah, super nice dude. Gentleman farmer, actor, distiller, the man does it all. Jack of all trades. Good pizzaiolo as well. But anyway, so DVP got there early and is waiting at the gate. And there's two gates where people queue up. And what had happened was one of the gates had opened. The other gate had opened and people were streaming in. And meanwhile, this other gate where DVP was supposed to have opened at the same time, but for whatever reason, did not. So what did DVP do? He scaled the fence. 40-year-old man at the time, maybe a little older even. scaled the fence, jumped over, ran and got us a picnic table. DVP, the man who saved the Travers. But anyway, there's a few ideas for Travers stuff. Feel free to hit me up on Twitter with any other specific questions. We'll try to get you sorted out. There's an extremely small chance there might be a spot or two in my annual gathering. As we get closer, I'll let you know about potentially purchasing into that. But let's just say we do Travers right. Do you think that's a fair assessment, JK?
Yeah, well, we did until Elliot Honecker and Keen Ice ruined it.
Man, you just don't get it. You don't get over this stuff easily. And this is before we even get to talking about some of the horses who participated in the race with Arklow, who had a similar effect on our Derby day this year. The thing about Elliot, though, it's kind of crazy. I should be just as bitter as you. I can't even pretend when it comes to Elliot. He's just too nice.
Yeah, he was really nice. I got a FedEx. I thought my mom sent me a package, or I ordered some cool electronics device that I forgot about. And I go to my FedEx thing, and it's just a winner's photo of Arklow.
That's awesome. Did he do it trolling, or did you ask for that? I thought he told me a story that you asked for it, and you had kind of a funny reason.
Yeah, no, I joked. I said, "Send it. I need to remember these types of things." So no, it was a joke, but it was fun.
I thought the idea was motivation, you know, to show you, to remind you how close you'd come to that big score, and seeing Arklow would like keep you focused, so you were ready for the next one. That's how I took it. All right, that's it for listener questions for this week. If you have questions for us, hit us up on Twitter, or you can email us podcast@drf.com. We get to as many as we can. I'll tell you what, if you send us a question a few weeks ago that we never got to, that probably means I just forgot, too. So I won't be offended if there are any repeat question askers out there. Sometimes there's various reasons we can't get to everything, timing, politics, etc. But sometimes I just forget. So feel free to hit us up. I completely forgot. This was supposed to be the Epsom Oaks edition of the DRF Players Podcast, and I was going to watch that race and talk about it while the show was on, but it's too late, man. They've passed the wire, so apologies on that. We'll see if we can get a quick result here at least. But meanwhile, let's start talking about the races this weekend. Let's start out at Belmont with the Pennine Ridge. Some old friends in here, Jonathan. I have a feeling anyone who's a regular listener to the show is going to know exactly who we're picking.
Well, I know who Muggs the Handicapping Labrador is going to pick.
Her hunch play horse is in here, Muggs-O-Matic. Yeah. I did notice that, but I think even Muggs-O-Matic at this point is betting on Good Samaritan. But we'll see. What are your you don't really give that horse any chance, do you, Muggs-O-Matic? Just a hunch play?
No, yeah. No, look here. I'll be very quick. Good Samaritan will be my choice. There's nothing really interesting to say about him. I just think he's the best horse in the field. However, there is a couple horses that I think are interesting. Oscar Performance. There's something to have to be figured out about this horse. Did this horse not advance from 2 to 3, or does he not like it soft? Because it was soft at Keeneland and he ran poorly. It was soft at Churchill, he ran poorly. So you have to figure that out for yourself. I think it's a little bit of both, but I think that you could get the price to figure it out if you are a supporter of Oscar Performance. The other horse that I think is really talented is Bowie's Hero. Phil D'Amato hops on the plane with this one. The last race he ran in last time was pretty impressive. Missed the break. Was tons the best in that race. However, he did get a little bit of a setup, but he was bumping heads with Big Score back in the day. I still do think he's a quality horse that could get a piece of it, but ultimately my selection is Good Samaritan.
All right. Well, Good Samaritan makes sense. I mean, we've talked about him so much on the show. The case in the main is this super talented horse who just came flying last time, kind of just ran out of ground, and should really improve second start of the layoff. You made all the points I wanted to talk about basically about Oscar Performance, but the other thing I wanted to say is, I mean, isn't he just dead loose in here? Do you think he'll enjoy a pace advantage?
And he wasn't not loose at Churchill, you know? I mean,
loose on soft ground isn't the same thing a lot of the time.
Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough.
And wasn't he also towards the inside?
He was.
And remember, we talked about how boggy that turf course was. So, I mean, I do think if you were just looking at speed figures, he looks like a horse who's tailed off. If you look at...
Right, but here's the... Here's the thing, though. Something I've run into recently, too, with all of those outside horses and inside horses from Derby and Oaks on the main track is... Yes, a horse can be disadvantageous. They can find a disadvantageous trip by being on the inside of a dead rail or on the outside of a good rail. But the problem is that what other circumstances were involved in that race? And that's what you try to have. You have to, you know, what other handicapping circumstances? And so my question with Oscar Performance is, yes, he was on the wrong part of the turf course and it was soft. But there's still a question of, is he as good as he was at two? And that is where I think sometimes – these can lead you down a bad path. You know, a horse that runs a good number on a dead rail, but maybe the slop moved him up that day, and it wasn't. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's hard to know.
Contradicting.
Yeah,
it can lead you in a different direction.
I'm just saying that there's a huge difference between a potential pace advantage on a bog, running on the wrong part of the track, and what he might face. But despite that, I mean, I'm potentially leaving him in the mix. Good Samaritan's definitely the play for me. The other dimension, curious to get your thoughts on number 7, Ticonderoga. Just has a very live look, patiently handled by the Turf Master. We know a guy who calls himself the Turf Master, but I think I'm getting ready to just call Chad Brown the Turf Master.
Yeah, you know, this horse, I remember he was impressive, you know, as a 2-year-old. I'm just not a believer. I just don't think he's as good as these other horses, and he's gonna always take a little bit of extra money when it's Chad on the turf.
Well, that's fair too. Though I'll say whatever you pay lately, it's been worth every penny. Let's move on to the Eatontown. I'll be there in person for this one at Monmouth. One of my favorite horses in training, Time and Motion, is one of the morning line faves. Do you think she's actually gonna run here though?
Is she cross-entered somewhere else?
I don't know that she is, but I know that there's a lot of races coming up where you wouldn't have to run shorter than probably your best in a far outside post position in a tight turf course.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess there is quite a bit of other spots. And the other issue I guess is that you know, what's the weather supposed to be like this weekend at Monmouth?
To be honest, I haven't checked. I was sort of just assuming it was going to be nice, but, you know, that doesn't mean a darn thing.
Right. Yeah, you know, for me in this spot, I just got done talking about how Chad's over bet, and then you made a great point, too, that Chad still runs well. It's probably been worth it. I think Light in Paris is dangerous in this spot. I'm not crazy about the post. It's not ideal, obviously. But I would think that Light in Paris could be tough in here. Time and Motion, if she stays, obviously is one that you'd have to keep your eye on.
Yeah, I mean, even I don't think I could bet Time and Motion in here from that post against this group. I obviously would depending on what the bet was, would probably try to save. But, I mean, even I can't muster a lot of enthusiasm at the likely price in this spot from here anyway. I was going to try to get clever with number 11, All in Fun. You mentioned that idea before, the concept of horses who might just act better, turf horses acting better on certain types of ground than others. I was thinking maybe that could be the case with All in Fun. I think she's got the tactical speed to negotiate the post. And that last race at Monmouth, I don't know if you remember or watched that again, where she got DQ'd, sort of a questionable DQ to begin with. But I thought that was a spot where she did all the dirty work. She beat the 3-5 favorite and then just got run down. And I just thought at a huge price, tactical speed, enough finish, maybe one to play around with at a price to get somewhere in those verticals. Pretty cool race to have in the middle of, or towards the end of the Monmouth contest, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. So often we have some tricky races, I guess is the best way to say it, at the end of tournaments. I guess they do. They are going to end it with a 7-5 claimer, so maybe they are going to keep the tradition alive. But but definitely one that'll be interesting to watch. And it's one of those races that I think is kind of like one of those moving races where there's not going to be any standout favorite. Someone's going to have a sizable win on whoever wins that race and should put themselves into a good position.
It seems like it's going to be a very cool betting race, and I'm looking forward to getting to see it live. Well, let's stick around for the turf and move over a little bit to Penn National for the Grade 2 Penn Mile. You mentioned Big Score before. He's back. Is he your pick here? It was one of these races where I just kept circling back to the favorites, including Big Score. But maybe you have something a little more clever.
Yeah, I do. I want to bet Holiday Stone. You know, exactly what you talked about. That horse against in the race with Arklow and the American Turf on Derby Day. The horse was kind of in the inside in the pocket, and obviously that wasn't where you wanted to be on that day. And horse didn't run very well. But if you kind of put a line through that one, the two previous races, he was beaten half a length by Big Score, and then ran well at Tampa as well with. Without much of a trip. So Holiday Stone for me is one that tournament situations, if I was playing two entries, I would use him on both. Parimutually, I'll try to get him hooked up in some other situations. So number six, Holiday Stone.
And when you say without a trip, you mean without a good trip?
Yes, without a good trip. Yeah, yeah, no. It's just a little note we'll write sometimes is no trip. Like, you know, just the horse didn't get a good trip.
Right. Looks like plenty of speed signed on in there. That should be helpful to everybody trying to come from farther back. I got to do a little more digging on that one, but I'll certainly get you make good points about Holiday Stone. And you're not anti-Big Score. You just thought there was maybe an opportunity to get a little bit more out of it.
Yeah, no, I think when you look at the morning line and you look at what you think is going to happen with Big Score and some of his big wins, he's 5-2 on the morning line, and you're getting a horse that was beaten a half a length to him at 12-1, who's coming off of an excuse. Those are the types of opportunities that I think that you can make money in this game, playing against the public who's going to see Big Score, you know, running third in that stake race, and conversely with Holiday Stone running eighth. And it's just one of those deals where I think you can, if you can find, dig up an excuse. The public might miss it, and you can find some value.
I do love those kind of form handicapping angles. They can be misleading depending on some other secondary factors, but when you can see horse A was within a length of horse B without obvious reason why, based on trip or pace, etc., and then they come back and one is five times the price of the other one, there's definitely money to be made with those type of angles. Just taking a quick look at the weather in the Northeast, it looks like we're good to go. It looks like it's going to be what it's been here. Maybe a 20% chance of showers, but hopefully we can avoid that, or they'll be minor, and things will be knock-knock fast and firm for us for hopefully both of the all three of the cards we've talked about so far. But let's move out west, a place where it's usually fast and firm, except for this winter, but things seem to be back on the right track. Now, a pair of grade ones at Santa Anita on Saturday, starting with the Shoemaker Mile. I'll just give my pick quickly. I thought it looked like a good spot for Balabali, attracting Mike Smith away from Bolo, presumably, and I just thought the things might set up nicely to see the real version of Balabali back in California. I know he's a horse you have kind of a checkered past with, Jonathan. I'm expecting you to be cynical about this one.
Yeah, he's one of those horses that we talked about on Tuesday. I think he used the word morning glory, where he was always getting bet off the board based on his workouts. And you know, we've talked about the workout reports and on the West Coast, as well as the stuff we get from our wonderful staff at DRF with the DRF Clocker Report. But you know, you'll see these A-minuses, B-pluses, and the horses don't pick up their feet. He was one of those horses for a long, long time, and last time he somehow figured it out. So, for my Kinchin's Corner, I did a play with – I used three horses in the pick three to my single in the next race, which we'll get to in a little bit. But Balabali was one of them. I also used Farhan, and I used Free Rose. I think that the interesting part about this race is what's going to happen with the pace. what is going to happen with Heart to Heart, who's drawn to the inside with Julien Leparue, who we've talked about a few times, is a guy that could ask a horse to save something for later. But what does he do from the rail? Is What of You going to go and be loose? Are they going to kind of ding-dong around there? I think they're going to ding-dong. I think that Julien, on a firm course, going a flat mile, I think he's going to send Heart to Heart away from there instead of getting kind of stuck in behind chasing What of You. And I think it's going to set up nicely for, like you said, Bala Bali, Farhan, or Free Rose. I think Free Rose probably presents the most value for Richie Valtas coming back off of a 192-day, 182-day layoff. But I think that that horse is one that could definitely get a piece and could possibly win it. What is a big number, but no Bolo for me. I do like Gangster with the best, probably one of the best names in a long time. I think that's great. There's just the one word Gangster, but I'm going to stick to the other three.
Bolo's a horse that I had pegged long ago as a grade one winner on turf. He's a multiple graded stakes winner. Hasn't quite gotten to the grade one level. I don't love Mike Smith, who's been rather loyal to him departing, but I wonder if things work out just right under Nakatani, if he couldn't have an impact here. You quickly dismissed him, but what about him just trying to make more one run if the pace shapes the way you think it might?
He's going to have to beat me. I think that he's a a horse that you constantly think he's going to run well, and he doesn't. And those are the kind of horses that you can burn a lot of money on. Of his last, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Of his last 8 races, he's lost 6 of them, and I was against him on all 8, so I'll take those numbers.
Makes perfect sense. Let's move on to our final race for the show today. It's the Beholder. We're still at a mile. This time we're on the main track, and it looks like an interesting three-way clash between Finest City, Stellar Wind, and Vale Dori. Let's take a momentary tangent based on the tweet that you sent out. First, for those who didn't see it, what was your analysis of this race?
Well, I said that the filly I'm going to pick is going to win, like I'm going to win the Triple Crown fantasy draft that we did by open lengths.
I think you even used past tense to make it more obnoxious, because you know the Triple Crown fantasy season isn't over yet, and it's not like the scenario I'm about to describe is impossible. Last year at this time, we had me, I think, still in the lead, podcast host emeritus Mike Hogan in contention, and Chris Larmy farther back, but with the opportunity, if Larmy ran first and second in the Belmont, in that case, to tie both of us. It ended up being, as we described it on the show, a three-way tie for last with Jonathan even farther back. And now it's a similar situation here where he's got Classic Empire still running. He's got J-Boy's Echo running. He might even have Patch running. And should some combination of those horses hit the exacta here, he could catch you, JK. Are you completely discounting this possibility?
Yeah, I am. This is one of those hot sports opinions, right? One of those annoying Skip Bayless, Stephen A. Smith deals where, like, you say something, like, really outrageous, and if you're wrong, you're like, oh, well, it was outrageous anyway, so no big deal. And if you're right, you act as if you were, like, you know, the smartest human being in the room. So that's kind of what I was going for with this, is I call my shot. If I'm right, then I seem like a smart guy, and if I'm wrong, I just blame it on being unlucky.
All right, well, we'll see what happens in the Belmont Stakes in our Triple Crown draft. It does. You're obviously still 1-5, if not 1-9, but it ain't over yet. 1-9 shots get beat every day. All right, let's talk about this race in all seriousness. Why don't you just run through your quick thoughts on the main contenders here, and why you think it's such a slam dunk.
Well, I think Vale Dori is one of those types that good for her, and good for the ownership, the connections for Bob, for kind of spotting her in the right spots. I think she's taken advantage of the fact that Stellar Wind kind of got a late start to the year. When you look back through her races, you're not seeing any world beaters in her last 3 and 4 wins. Show Stealer, who's 20-1 in this race, has run second to her a number of times, and sensitively, and Sky Diamonds, who was I think Sky Diamonds might have even been in some claiming races, if not just lower level allowance races. So Val Dori just doesn't really do it for me. If you look at that race two back, they were going a mile and eighth in the Grade One Santa Margarita, and she beat Finest City in that spot. The difference today is they're going to be going a mile. Mugs, I didn't pick Mugs Atastic. I don't know what she's getting upset about. Stellar Wind, I just feel like she might have had her best days behind her. She, the race was pretty slow in the Apple Blossom. I've talked to a few figure makers, and I haven't done the research, but I've talked to a few figure makers that say that there's an issue with that figure. And the issue being is that in the race directly after Stellar Wind was a mile and a 16th race. I believe it was an allowance race, was like a second faster, with horses that aren't supposed to run a second faster than Stellar Wind. And so whatever that issue was, it's created. It was an allowance race that Dan, the go-to man, was involved in. So if you wanted to, he ran second in that race. But so something happened there, and so I'm not really sure what to make of that figure. That's what kind of leads me to Finest City. She was wide in the slop at Churchill Downs and the Humana Distaff. They've obviously have seen something from her that makes them think that she can run two turns. She's done it successfully on the grass. She ran in the mile and eighth race and was just beat by, Val Dori, who's a multiple graded stakes winner. I think that she's going to turn the tables. I think she's going to be loose in this race, and I think that she's going to hold on at a mile. She will not beat these horses at a mile on a 16th or further, but I think at a mile it might just be her time.
I was going to land on her based on the track angle. We've seen plenty of these horses with those trip excuses, the trip and bias excuses from Oaks and Derby Day, come back and run well. She seemed like one in there. I agree, Val Dori is cool as she is, maybe not up to this task. And I do buy that idea that just looking at the figures, you can maybe make the case. I mean, who knows? Maybe she'll bounce back right here. Maybe she'll get her act together as the year goes on. But at least can't fully discount the possibility of Stellar Wind going the wrong way, at least figure-wise, at what's going to be an odds-on price. So I'm unfortunate. I wanted to argue with you properly about this. Instead, I just chose to make fun of you for your arrogant Triple Crown draft comments.
That's fair.
We are running close to the end of the hour. We have another minute or so, JK, if you have any closing thoughts for this Friday.
Let's see. Do we miss any stakes tomorrow? Churchill. Limousine Liberal is running tomorrow at Churchill, who was friendly to podcast listeners on Derby and Oaks Day.
Yes.
Interesting. He was on the outside that day, but it happened. I think that race happened like right when it started pouring rain, right? So I have no idea what to make of that.
Yeah, it didn't look like he was bias busting in that race. Remember also that was one turn, and we've talked about how at times Churchill, the two-turn races can play very differently than the one-turn races. So it's hard to know. I'm taking him kind of – my attitude about him from that spot is to more just take him at face value rather than giving him a ton of extra credit. But I could
right,
be wrong.
I agree. I think that's probably safe. Nick Tamro pointed out, like, why not wait and run him in the True North, which I believe is a grade two, in a week on a big weekend. But fair enough. I mean, what's the big difference between a grade two and I believe that race is a grade three, and it's in your own backyard and you don't got a ship. So it all makes sense, I guess, at the end of the day, but it'll be interesting to see how he runs back.
Definitely. He's been good to us in the past and is certainly worth paying attention to. Want to remind folks one more time, last chance to qualify for Belmont. Opportunities every day on DRF tournaments. If you're listening live, we've got this special all Belmont lineup tonight. That's going to be fun for the Sunset Racing. Have those round one qualifiers for $95 every day this weekend. Win your way in to the World Championship of Handicapping. Get involved on Sunday. So I want to see you multi-tabling, playing in the WCH Grade 1 from the contest room at Belmont while you're competing against some of the best players in the country in the Belmont Betting Challenge. Lots of good action going on at DRF tournaments. Find it all, tournaments.drf.com. And that is all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank Jonathan Kinchin. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. We will be back on Tuesday. May you win all your photos.